This is how conversations with my papa always start.
Hey, what's going on with you?
Where they end up, usually a couple hours later, I can never predict. We talk for hours, going off on tangents and yarns.
Yeah. You heard the news today about that New York cop?
And my papa always has stories to tell. He's always been my favorite storyteller.
He looked over at her and started talking to her because he thought she was Italian. I don't know. Maybe he. I don't know if he ever understood that she wasn't talking back good, but I think she flirted her way out of it, and we got away with it.
This phone conversation was slightly different, though. I called with a specific story in mind. His story. Well, at least so far.
My life has been so different. So different than normal that it's impossible to pick any one thing that I pick to talk about it so far. Any one of it sounds so different and so strange. Well, I was born in Texarkana, Arkansas, and my folks left Texarkana, Arkansas when I was about 5 years old and traveled all the way across the west to the state of California, Oregon. My parents were, Daddy had an eighth grade education. Daddy was a sharecropper. He grew up on, not a tenant farmer, more, if anybody knows the difference between tenant farmer and sharecropper. But Mama, she grew up, her family was fairly, well-to-do family, but her daddy died when she was little. Her brothers and sisters, more or less, I guess I just say they fought over the place that they owned. And she married my daddy, which, you know, that's where they started that. And they were the kind of people who really, they were good people. They minded their own business. They just didn't want to be a part of what a lot of people do in society. They didn't go out and go to church. They didn't participate in social events. It's just me and my wife, my son John and his wife. That's sort of the way they thought. So I didn't have a lot of social life going up, but mostly blue. Mother, she just didn't read a lot. Thought a lot and talked about a lot of stuff. I mean, very high IQ, but she just never was part of anything, wanted to be a part of anything, didn't want to be. Not much more you can say about them than that. They lived in a pickup truck. When we traveled, all the stuff in the truck, it was sort of like the Okies in Grapes of Wrath. That was kind of life that we led. Came back, and that's too long a story to tell at one time. That's just the way it was. We'd stop a little bit, work a little bit, and travel a little bit. That was just the way they were. We ended up in Memphis, Tennessee. And when I was 6, I went to school there for a little while. They picked cotton over across the river, and I ended up in Florida. They picked oranges. Ended up back in North Alabama, and they finally settled, I guess partly because of me. And the last 8 years of school was in Bruton, Alabama. That's where I grew up. Growing up in Bruton, you know, I went to a little country school and when I first got there. And it was pretty tough. I mean, it was country people. But it was sort of a real tough area. So you had to grow up and be pretty tough to survive, really, when it comes down to it. It's just tough, pretty tough, poor. And even amongst those people that were poor, I was poor. I was poor living amongst those people. Let me go back and start, and something I'm leaving out. When I was in Florida, when I was in the first, second, third grade, we lived close to a city dump. And back then, people just dumped the garbage out and burned it. trash. It didn't do like it do now, separate out the garbage and, you know, different from organic stuff. And it was books and magazines dumped out, and every day I'd go to the garbage dump, I'd gather up all the books and magazines I could find. I just, whatever, eclectic stories. I read everything I could find. I gathered up postage stamps from all over the world and eclectic stamps. By the time I got out of high school, I'd go to the dumps and get stuff like that. That's the way I got a lot of my education coming up. I knew a lot more than a lot of people did in my situation because that's just the way I did.
It's strange. I always thought I knew my family well, that I knew my grandparents really well. I've always been close with my papa, and I've loved listening to his stories ever since I can remember. But here he was telling me things I had never heard. Sure, I knew his family was poor growing up. I knew he had a hard upbringing. But I suppose I never really took the time to hear the details. Until today.
I was in college in Jefferson Davis Junior College in Brewton, Alabama. And I was going to school there, and I worked at a radio and TV shop. I had a friend that worked there, and he was dating your grandmother's first cousin. So I come into work one day, and she said, I got you a date. I said, I don't want to go on dates. As a matter of fact, I had planned on going catfishing that night. I want to go catfish. But anyhow, he said, I said, okay, fine. I go with him, and I show up, and man, I thought the best looking thing I ever saw in my life. I ain't that kid. I walked in there and I said, well, this probably ain't gonna work out. Poor as I was and whatever, but I went on a date and, you know, I cussed and smoked, and she was not used to any of that kind of stuff, you know. And it just didn't work out. She didn't much like me at all. But she was so good looking, I definitely wanted to see her again. She went to church. It was Wednesday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night. And Wednesday night, her friend invited me to church. She got mad about that. I didn't want to invite that boy to church. I didn't want to see him again. But because she invited me, she had to go with me. So we went to church together. You know, by the third or fourth day, I started acting more normal, more like I should, and we just fell in love with each other. We hit it off real fast. It was as close to me, it was love at first sight. Your granny won't admit that it was love at first sight with her, but I did act pretty crazy. You know, I was different than anything she was used to. I was pretty rough. I was a diamond in the rough, as she says, and she swing that diamond up a little bit. We dated, and it wasn't really but about 2 months before I joined the Army because I felt like that I wanted to get married. I joined the Army because that was the only way that I felt like that I could live in Brewton, Alabama with my background. I could have enough money to support a wife and a family. It was stupid in a way. I just went and joined the Army during the Vietnam War. I came back in the middle of an Officer Kennedy school, and we got married, and she went back with me. And you asked me how we got together. I guess I sped that up pretty fast, didn't I? After I got married, I graduated from OCS. I was a second lieutenant. The military flew me out to Italy. She went with me, and we lived on the economy. It wasn't on a base or anything. We actually, it was a little small town, and it was a missile base. We would go out riding in the country, we'd ride up in the mountains and in the Italian Alps, and we went to Venice and just lived on the economy, learned to speak another Italian to get by. It wasn't out of a book. We just learned to speak Italian. But it was extremely hard for her to be somewhere in a foreign country. And then her mother died, we had to come back, and time she got through her mother's funeral, I got orders from Vietnam. And I remember the night before I was going to Vietnam, they were landing on the moon the day before. And I wanted to watch that, hurt her feelings really, because I was going to be going to war, might be going to get killed. I didn't want to deal with that, I didn't face that. But she knew that. You watched on news every day. And I was an artillery officer. It wasn't like I was something simple, so artillery officer. Until we watched them to walk on the moon. And next day, I'm on an airplane headed for the Jolly Green Juggling. I went to Hamburger Hill to start with, and I didn't have any better sense to write home letters home. Well, here I'm Hamburger Hill. Oh, boy, look here. They really blow that place up. You know, don't believe all you see on the news. You know, there ain't that many get killed here and all this kind of stuff. And telling about the war like an idiot. I write a letter home. It takes 2, 3, 4 days. It takes 4 days for it to get there, get home. I'm out in the jungle. They kick it. You know, I write a letter, they pick it up on a helicopter for 4 days. So I write four letters, they pick up four letters. But our letters, if you read our letters back and forth, our love is pretty obvious there. But it was hard. You would lay out, I remember laying there at night and I'd look. I'd lay there and you'd look at the moon, think about, well, wonder what it looks like where she's at, Of course, it was daylight where she was at, but you lay and look at the moon and wonder what it looked like where she was at, and it just seemed like you was on the other side of the world and loneliness, just wanting to be home. We were just living out in the jungle, out of our backpacks. And there's not much to say about that. And I missed her. Sometimes I'd write a letter. They wasn't going to pick up a letter for 4 days, and I'd write a serial letter. I'd write a letter, pick up on the same letter the next day. The next day, every time I stop, I'd write a little bit or write about my dreams and what I wanted, what we were going to do when I got back. When I got there, 1969, if you read it, was the second most people actually died in Vietnam in 1969. The most died in 1968, second most in 1969. It don't matter. It's all about the same. When it's all said and done. And I was a forward observer, 101st Airborne. My job was to direct the artillery fire. Job was the eyes for the artillery. Artillery might be 15 miles from me, but I was just out in the middle of the jungle, and I would send the position in, the coordinates on a suspected target. They'd bring in fire, and then I would adjust it in until we got the target. Or stopped it from shooting us, whatever it took, That was my job. Coming home, it was raining real hard. They couldn't navigate and had to fly so low that they really didn't want to fly. But when I got the word that I was supposed to come home, they didn't want anybody to fly. But somebody had got killed, had in a body bag, and somebody had to have they had to have an officer to fly with that body. They asked for volunteers. I said, I'll do it. I wanted to leave, so I flew from Fubai to Da Nang with that body. That's how I got there. That was a were just real surreal. The whole thing was surreal. You know, flying in that old airplane, thinking that just philosophically riding out with a dead body, just thinking, well, there's two of them here. You know, I'm the one coming home alive, you know. By the time I got home, the war itself, I didn't know then how much it affected me. And just something as simple as what I just got through telling you. Seeing the things I saw, being involved in the things, and the experience of just actually fighting for that long, just here for your life. I didn't know that I had a problem. Some of the stuff I'm telling you, probably I had never told people before. I know now why I've always had such a hard time talking about it, because you try to just tell this, you know, it's unbelievable.
Our conversation went on for another 2 hours, and it felt like we barely started. I came to a realization. I should call my papa more often. An audio documentary by Ava Lowry, featuring one of my favorite people, my papa, Byron Story. Music by Gerdenark from the Free Music Archive. Special thanks to John Buen and the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University.